And welcome to the Glacially Musical Podcast. It is beer, metal, and swearing. Of course, I am Nick Cameron of Glacially Musical, joined by my good friend, a guy who's got so much junk in the trunk, you're always going to wonder, Keefe Clown Car. How are we doing today, buddy?
Keefe Clown Car? Oh my goodness.
I'm sorry, it was the last minute.
Fair enough. How's it going? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. I am good. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. If you are here for the final episode of DRI, where we review and rate DRI's Thrash Zone, thank you for joining us. Here's how we do this. We have a greeting, a beer check, a vinyl check, shirt check, news check, meat of the day. Again, meat of the day, DRI, Dirty Rotten Imbeciles, Thrash Zone. I'm going to get the beer party started. Today I am drinking a Voodoo Ranger IPA by New Belgium Brewing. And I put that directly out of the camera so you could not see that awesome evil Knievel pour.
Stunt pour. I am drinking a beer today I have had many times on the podcast, an Oscar Blues Mama's Little Pills, or Yellow Pills, whatever it is. I think it's a... Is that a Rolling Stones reference?
I'm not sure.
Finger fudge pour all the time. Do, do, do. And... Sharky says hi. Sharky's gonna join us today. Ha ha. Cheers.
Cheers, my friend. I'm gonna have to bring my shark next time. I said that last time, but... Oh, that is a delicious, delicious beer. I love Voodoo Ranger is one of my absolute go-tos. In fact, that is what I have told the child to tell me when I have gotten choice paralysis when we're at the store. Dad, just buy Voodoo Ranger. But if you don't mind, I'm going to hit my vinyl check this week. Said last week, I'm going to check four records. I'm going to check four full LPs of songs. This week, I am checking one release. It is the latest release by our queen, the goddess, the rock star, apparently, the lady who helped make COVID vaccines happen. Dolly Parton, rock star, on vinyl. It is four LPs, as I said. It's got an insert, the hype sticker's in there. You know, many pictures of Dolly, who is still just absolutely gorgeous after all these years. Nothing has changed there. Actually, I have not listened to it yet, so I cannot do a review, but perhaps a chaser on Rockstar is in order.
We need a chaser immediately, maybe, unless we're going to go right into the next series. I don't know.
Chaser.
So then, maybe. I do love Dolly. I have heard the singles. I haven't heard the whole album. I do want to buy it. Is that the color vinyl or the black?
No, it's the black. It was $60 on Amazon when I got it. I think it went up a little bit since then. The colored, cool colored ones were closer to 80, and I thought, you know what? You can't hear the cool color. I'll just get the regular one.
You can't hear it. That's great. Respect to Dolly. 75 years young, an absolute treasure.
Little and absolutely lovely on the Orville. She is.
Never watched it.
Oh my God, she is a feminist icon on the Orville.
She already was. I mean.
Yeah, but she's a feminist icon to an all male species that actually does have females.
Oh.
That they don't talk. It's a long story. Oh. Watch the show. It's amazing. Okay. It's the best Star Trek show I've ever seen.
And it's not a Star Trek show. Okay.
It was supposed to be. Star Trek said no.
Oh, really? That's crazy.
Star Trek said no. So he went, oh, yeah. You know who says yes? Fox.
Fox, who loves him because of Family Guy and American Dad. Good morning, USA. I love that show. Actually, I think I like American Dad almost more than Family Guy along a certain timeline. I do like Family Guy.
You are wrong.
I'm allowed to be loved. But Roger is basically Paul Lynde, who I love, you know?
Yes, that is true. He is also just Stewie.
He's also Stewie, yeah. All right, is it time for my time for my vinyl check? Because you checked your four LPs. That was a fake out.
Ah, funny though, wasn't it?
Funny how? That was last week. Or two weeks ago.
That was three.
I am checking one of my absolute favorite records of all time. I have never had it on vinyl. They just reissued it. I listen to this record at least once a week, if not multiple times a week. I know you don't do Spotify or Spotify, you know, so you don't maybe know what Spotify Wrapped is. In my Spotify Wrapped, it was like, here's your five songs, here's your five albums you played the most, and this was number one across the board. So what is it? It is this bad boy, Opeth, Damnation.
And very nice. This is
the unplugged Opeth record, brand new reissue. I think it was with the shipping a little pricey, I will tell you. I bought this back earlier in the fall, so I think the album was like $39.99 to one vinyl. Like, it doesn't need to be, it's an EP, it didn't need to be $40 plus shipping, but like, I had to have this. So.
Oh my god.
Here's a insert with all the lyrics, which I know by heart anyway. This is really cool. Photo of the band, and then we have the milky white vinyl, the milk vinyl. Don't spill the milk. Very classy, kind of matches the vibe of the album. Snow White, maybe.
I can't remember his name. I'm gonna quote LeVar Burton on this one. Wouldn't have done that, Frakes.
Gotcha. It is officially Music for Nations is on the label, which is really interesting because technically, you know, I don't know if they own some of the rights and that's why, but Music for Nations. So there's Opeth, Damnation. I do have Deliverance already on vinyl. Then I believe a new Deliverance is coming out. And that's my vinyl check, pal.
Fair enough. We'll just go ahead and do the news check first. Couple little bits for me from Kiss. First one is a bit sad. Our good friend Bruce Kulick, friend of the show, one of these days, has decided to leave Grand Funk Railroad. Apparently their touring schedule just did not allow him time in order to continue writing his own music, recording his own music, or doing tours. I believe that he really wanted to do the Kulick Brothers tour that they had done on the Kiss Cruise, where they were played the 80s Kiss tunes and 70s Kiss tunes that they each played on with a backing band. And we also haven't had a new album from Bruce since 2008. It has been 15 years since he released BK3, which was actually quite a good record. I wish they would re-release that on vinyl. From what I understand, it sounded really good, but I didn't want to pay the $15 in shipping on it, so I did not buy one because I'm a jerk. But the other piece of a little bit of Kiss news, another ex-guitarist, Ace Frehley, is throwing shade at everybody. He said, told Tommy, now the Kiss is over, go back to the breadline. No, Tommy's fine. Tommy made a good financial choice. He chose financial freedom over artistic creativity. He seems happy with the situation. He seems thankful. And you're the one playing to food trucks at used car lots for free. Glad you're making records. Hope this next one's good. And last piece of Kiss news, and one more ex-Kiss guitarist news. Vinnie Vincent has kicked out 700 of the 798 members of the Vinnie Vincent Euphoria fans page. You now must pay $200 per year in order to be a member. As he stated via Paul Runner, well-known sock puppet, there have been thousands of people coming in and signing up. Remember, there were only 798 total members. But over the last 3 months, they had several thousand new signups. And they're just trolls and creating drama. So if you don't want to go there, kiss Vinny's butt and call it ice cream. You shouldn't be there because that's what the group is for. So pay $200 and get into the Facebook page and hope he doesn't ban you anyway.
So I'm going to comment on a few of your things before I drop a couple of quick rapid fire news post ideas myself. By the way, the Kulick news somehow is the biggest story in Ghost Cult to start the year. I'm really surprised, odd, actually. Yeah, just for whatever reason, people picked it up. We seem to be the only site that ran it, except for, you know, he gave that exclusive interview to, I think, Ultimate Guitar or something. Do you think this means Union has a shot to come back?
Well, the last time John Corabi played St. Louis, he played a tiny little club 45 miles southwest with an acoustic guitar on a Tuesday.
Well, I mean, I'm not talking about touring, because right, Bruce doesn't want to tour. I think that's the reason.
The way I read it isn't that he didn't want to tour. He just wanted to have this block of the year for touring. Because the way he described Grand Funk Railroad is basically, because they're on the casino circuit, every time they've been here for the past 10 years, it has been one of the casinos. Basically, the casino sends you a letter that says, hey, do you want to make $50,000? Get on, and they say they would just get on a plane, do a one-off. They don't bring a whole lot of gear or stage show, so it's easy. And that was just the way he described it. It just, because they don't have a regular touring schedule. So I do think there could be, basically, does John Corabi believe that he'd make more money doing Union rather than doing his solo stuff? Then yes, there will be Union. He did do some work with Mick Mars after Motley Crue's original retirement. Nothing came of it. I heard like a snippet of a song, I think, but I would love to see Union come back. I am definitely all in for another Union record.
I would like a Union record. Ace really can't shut up, but you know, it's a day that ends in Y. I don't know why he's talking so much. It's kind of ridiculous. Guy needs to stop. You know, John Astronomy, I'm looking at you. Please get your guy to pipe down. Rein him in. That's your job as his manager. And the Vinny news, you know, just to say, like, it's his prerogative to gatekeep his own community, right? Like, if he feels like that $200 times 98 people is a better investment than giving fan engagement away for free, which has proven to build lifelong fans, you know, I wonder, are those people that are now not paying for that fan community, maybe he just figures those are the people that are not going to come to the thing anyway when he does things.
I have seen a lot of, oh my God, I cannot believe you're about to do this. I can't afford this right now. And then, you know, Vinny as Paul saying, quit being a whiner, suck it up, find the money. Or you're a troll. I mean, right, it's gone. The whole Vinny Vincent train has gone completely off the rails.
Right after Ace complimented him and said, Vinny's the only guy I like. He's like, Bruce is okay, but we're not the same kind of guitar players. Vinny I like the most. We always got along. Tommy sucks. Hey, stop, Ace. He also, I guess he said right after 10,000 Watts or whatever is over, he's going to go right to doing Origins 3. No one wants it. No one asked for it.
Except nobody wanted Origins 2. And Origins 2 was just a redo of Origins 1. I mean, I liked Origins 2, but I still didn't buy it. And Spaceman was abject crap. I mean, just crap on crap. So hopefully 10,000 volts is worth something.
Okay. Really quick, two other news stories. In a story about a band we did a prior series on, Slipknot, nothing but drama with Slipknot the last while. Controversial album, retirement of a major member, a longtime member, kicked out the drummer. Now they're being sued by the estate of Joey Jordison, the late original co-founding drummer, that the band has profited off his death, hijacked his like memorabilia, drums, costumes, etc., and used the memory of Joey's death to promote the last album because it wasn't going to do well. These are wild accusations. Slipknot has countersued. Apparently, these lawsuits went on in private in June, and they were just discovered recently. And it's just a shame, whether it's true or not, it's just a shame. Slipknot has countersued to say, like, don't sue us. But, you know, it's a shame that, you know, I think the fan community is feeling very bad about this. Like, the band is dragging Joey's name through the mud. Guy's dead. And the band has had a rough time. They've had a very rough go of it. And they do have a tour. You know, next year's the 25th anniversary of the debut album. And they will tour and play the full album and maybe some hits as an encore. But, like, they have floated the idea that they won't even take a drummer out on tour with them, which is why they fired Jay, and that they're going to have, like, drums on tape, which to me is disastrous. You wouldn't do that live on stage outdoors with, like, inner ear monitors and echoes and things. Like, you could, to not have a live drummer is potentially disastrous, you know?
Let me say, do I think they probably hijacked and took all of his stuff? Yeah, I do. However, he was not an owner. So all of that stuff would not have been owned by him. That would have been Slipknot Inc.'s property.
He might have promised his family they could have it back already. And then they didn't. That's might also have promised. A wrinkle that's been released, leaked.
Might have promised. Might not have a written piece of paper.
Right.
So anyway, and as for the idea of going without a live drummer, oh my God, just no.
Yeah, especially not that band, especially with the production they have. Please don't do it. Please, we're all asking you not to do it, please. And then just came across the wire while we are recording this. Apparently, you know, I have been touting that Rage Against the Machine has not ever rebooked their canceled tour because of Zach's injury. And apparently they have announced they are not coming back as a touring entity ever again. They posted a statement from the drummer. I could read it if you want me to.
No.
It's short. I know a lot of people are waiting for us to announce new tour dates for all the canceled RATM shows. I don't want to string people or myself along any further. So while there has been some communication that this may not be happening and that this may be happening in the future, I want to let you know that Rage Against the Machine, Tim, Zach, Tom, and I will not be touring or playing live again. I'm sorry for those who've been waiting for this to happen. I really wish it was. So, holy shit. I mean, that's pretty major. They canceled an entire year of shows across the world because Zach blew his leg out on that first tour. And I can understand that he doesn't, you know, like, time has passed, the moment is gone, the money's there, but maybe he's not feeling it anymore. I know that only Tom Morello showed up for the Rage Against the Machine induction into the Hall of Fame. I know you don't care about it. I don't either. I just like talking about it. I like complaining about it more than I like it. And I think this is a loss for the musical world because this is a huge, important, legendary band of the last 30 years. And they're done, basically.
I'm not a fan, really, but yeah, I see where this is really big. I'll say this and not be a jerk. I hope this is done out of Zach's desire rather than Zach's inability. If it is just, you know what, I just don't want to do this, then that's fine, and I salute you. If this is, you know, I just don't see myself getting back to being able to do it, then that really sucks.
But well, we're all getting older. Like, so. Let's not do it only for the money, right? That I respect. Let's not do it. Because a lot of people like to say, oh, Rage Against the Machine is on a major label. They make all kinds of money. They came back at Coachella. Like every single capitalist horrible thing.
I'm going to quote Lars Fredriksson on this. Is it punk to be on a major label? Is it punk to be on a mainstream tour? Well, it's no use telling the Pope there's church on Sunday. You got to tell everybody.
I get it. I was hoping to do a Rage Against the Machine run at some point, and I wouldn't be against doing a Rancid run.
No Rancid run.
Oh. I mean, no. Social D is horrible. Rancid is really good. Do you also... I bet you don't know Operation Ivy either.
No Operation Ivy run. No.
Oh, no. Come on. What is with you?
I don't like...
You hate Tool? Man, why are we friends? Like, we have to start examining our friendship again.
May we continue.
Why no Rancid? I like to know.
I find the music unaesthetically pleasing.
Oh, God. What about Rage, no? Why are you not a fan?
I am more of a fan of Rage than I was before. Street Sweeper Social Club really opened me up to being able to accept Tom Morello's playing. I did not realize that he's really amazing, but just in a very different way. And when they were popular and when they were making their first go-around, I wasn't in a place where I could wrap my head around, you know what, him, you know, whacking his guitar with an Allen wrench actually is pretty cool because it makes a neat sound. But
he learned all that from Tool, by the way. He learned all of that from his hometown buddy Adam Jones taught him the pick scrape and the Allen wrench thing.
Cool. I will not be sober.
Puns. You got puns. Shirt check. Go for it.
Voltron!
Pretty cool. I zoomed in on myself today for some reason. God forbid. It's got a very cool, distinctive back that I can't show you, but the front is just their logo.
I got this Voltron shirt in San Francisco in Chinatown, which is ironic. The one they had, there was another one that had Sven on it, and I had never seen any merch with Sven, and they had it in a medium. Why in the world would you have an anime t-shirt in medium? I just don't see where that even...
anime fans are all either petite girls or fat slob white dudes. I don't understand.
Exactly. You just need to make it in extra small and XL and up.
I wouldn't be mad at a super chubby G-Force shirt.
Mm.
Battle of the Planets, right?
Correct. Correct.
All right, sir. That is the news, the beer, the shirt, the vinyl. On to the meat of the episode. And let's try to bring this in at a reasonable 40, 39 more minutes.
All right, here we go. We are now arriving into October 10th, 1989. The World Series is going on, and I don't remember. Oh, I do remember who's in it. This is the first World Series. The Oakland A's versus the San Francisco Giants, the Bay Area World Series. It is the first World Series. It is the first baseball game. It contains the first baseball game, Game 3 in San Francisco. Game 3 is the first Major League Baseball game ever to be called because of earthquake. There had been games called because they went too long. There had been games called because they were hungry. There had been games called because of rain, of course. This one was earthquaked out. Not to make light of the situation, but it's an interesting bit of history, at which point the Oakland A's then go on to win their steroid-fueled 4-0 sweep over the Giants. But don't worry, the Giants have a lot going on for them for the next 30 years, whereas the A's do not.
You as
currently
a
reading Moneyball, actually.
I love Moneyball, the book and the movie. You as a, I know you won't watch the movie because you hate Brad Pitt, blah, 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 blah. You as a St. Louis fan should never bring up steroids to anybody. You have some nerve.
Why?
Your boy, Bonds' milk to Bonds' chocolate, like... Ebenita Ivory McGuire.
Oh, where did he come from?
Oakland, but he was
definitely
more on the roids when he was on your team.
No, he was just better at the roids when he was on our team.
Better. Selective history memory there, buddy. Selective member berries.
No, they were all on the roids back then. Then the Bash Brothers were totally on the juice. They just didn't know how to build mass yet.
What's better? So the 80s Cardinals all on the Schneef, which we haven't thrown that word around in a while, versus the aughts Cardinals all on the andro testosterone or whatever it is, andro.
Hey, they won more championships on the Schneef, so snort it up, Johnny. Hey, they stole a lot of bases. There might be a correlation there. Bring back small ball. Anyway, so it's 1989. It's October, and we are in the first year of the Bush administration. George H.W. Bush administration, and we are careening headlong into two things that are coming up in the next year: recession and war. The first time America admits they were in a war in 20 years, nearly 20 years, in which we've been in constant war ever since. So, yay! But right now, we are in this sweet spot of nothingness. The Simpsons are the number one show in America. Seinfeld is about to drop. Cheers is still going. Still has 3 or 4 years left of Cheers. It's just kind of a bland little spot. We're turning the corner. What is changing, however, is the musical landscape of heavier music. Nirvana exists at this point. So all of a sudden, when Guns N' Roses came out, this is what happened. All of the Sunset Strip hair bands and glam bands all of a sudden started looking at their 15-minute timers because Guns N' Roses were in sound. And then once Nirvana hits, Guns N' Roses got put on their timer. The world is changing. People are getting angrier. Music's getting heavier. 1989 also sees the release of Straight Outta Compton by NWA, one of the most seminal records of all time. We don't talk about the Hall of Fame too much. I should say we don't care about it too much, but I would make the argument for NWA to be in the Hall of Fame just for that one record alone, just like I would make the argument for Guns N' Roses to be in the Hall of Fame based on Appetite for Destruction alone. Those two records changed the world. Just like I, same with Nirvana's Nevermind. Those are singular records. They may not have sold 30 million copies, except for Guns N' Roses, but that puts those bands into it in their own particular thing. So what happens to DRI? DRI has been undergoing metamorphosis. We are positively... Oh, shoot. Damn it. Oh, wait. This is positively... Omar, cut all that. This is positively Kafka-esque, because they have gone through a complete and total metamorphosis. And here we are out on the other side. The cocoon is open and the butterfly's wings have sprouted. Now becomes the question, is that what you wanted, or do you think they've gone too far?
So, it's a tough one. They definitely have gone, the needle has gone completely the other direction to thrash. And on one hand, I would say there are some remarkable thrash albums in 89 in terms of the thrash scape, the landscape of the genre. Years of Decay, Overkill, Beneath the Remains, Sepultura, Alice in Hell, Annihilator, 35 years this year, Agent Orange by Sodom, Metal Church, Blessing in Disguise, Nuclear Assault, Creator, Extreme Aggression. There's a few, quite a few great records.
Should point out that the needle on the thrash clock is also ticking down at this point, too.
Right. We did Exodus, so we did Fabulous Disaster. I also want to shout out Voivod's Nothing Face as a great progressive thrash album. And Practice What You Preach, Testament, and Best Wishes, Cro-Mags. So Cro-Mags also was going kind of thrash this time also. So very interesting stuff. So Thrash Zone comes about. Other than Testament, who isn't a legend yet, they're just kind of a copycat band right now, and Sepultura, who is about to become legendary, there is not a major release from what you would consider today to be a major thrash band, except Overkill, who had already been a band for like 9 years in 89, and this is like their fifth or sixth release if you count the EP. So this is the most straight-up thrash record they could make. It is, once again, they have made three albums in 3 years that are all genre, you know, considered to be genre essentials. Although DRI would not be at the level of Slayer, Anthrax, Metallica, Megadeth. But right in the next wave at this time, they've been passed by other bands, many I mentioned just now. So yeah, it's really fascinating to kind of look at this evolution. Show me a band with a three album run in three consecutive years. So three albums in 3 years as good as these three albums, and you don't even like Crossover that much, which I think is an out and out classic. You prefer Four of a Kind, and I prefer Crossover to Four of a Kind. I think this is a very strong record, but I think we're gonna find out its weaknesses inherent, but like, it's a really, again, a third good record in a row. Didn't change the formula, again produced by Spike and Bill Metoyer, just the same two videos instead of one now, a couple of songs that have never come out of the set list again, three albums in a row. And I don't want to give my summary now. I'm going to hold this final thought for later. But we're going to rank them all at the end, and I am going to ask you a specific question about relevant to this record when we're done with the track listing. I will begin if you're ready.
Yeah, let's just go straight to the track listing.
Let's go straight to the track listings. We're trying to get the frick out of here. Once again, if it ain't broke, don't break it. DRI opens with the title track every time. Thrash Hard. Thrash Zone is officially unofficially the title track. It's Thrash Hard, Thrashard, Thrashard. It's a great opener, 3:40 on the count on the clock. Again, they're now doing more traditional type of albums instead of just blasting out like a grindcore or a punk band with as many tracks as they can do. They are definitely concerned with quality over quantity. The original track listing of this album, by the way, did not have labeled Uncurable and You Say I'm Scum. I'm sure both of our versions have those two tracks. But so side one was a little shorter than side two originally, just to throw that out there to you. But we're going to do the full 14 songs here because I think you probably listened to them too.
I did.
All right. Thoughts on Thrash Hard as an opening track?
Thrash Hard. Well, it does what it says on the tin. And immediately, yes, the sound difference is changed. We no longer have either sloppy playing and tight recording or tight playing and sloppy recording. We now have tight, tight. And I don't like tight, tight with DRI.
Yeah, that's not unfair.
Yeah.
I do.
I don't. Like the and there, it's going to show its weakness here in a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. The umpteenth song named Beneath the Wheel or Underneath the Wheel or Beyond the Wheel, something the wheel, right?
And this guy.
I hate the wheel in the sky, but Beneath the Wheel is longish. I might have cut a minute off of this, but it's also a pretty killer song, and it's heavy. I like it.
This song kind of shows the weakness of this album, is it is a little bloated. And Beneath the Wheel could have been a tight three minutes. It did not need to be 5.5, which is unfortunate.
Fair enough. Number three, Enemy Within, another good track. I think we're starting to see the weakness of this album is not so much that it's long, because again, I mentioned that there's two bonus tracks, so it was long at 12 songs. It's longer at 14, but I think Enemy Within is pretty strong. It's one of the better songs on here, and great lyrics, absolutely great lyrics.
Completely agree. Enemy Within is the first song that I really like. It harkens back a little bit. It's not quite the thrashiness of the previous two. To piggyback on your point, this album is basically 50 minutes long, and they basically only play in one key and one tuning and one amp setting. So live, that's a whole other animal, but on record, you really have to pay attention to how long you're going.
Did you say 1.5 or 5.0? This album is 48 minutes.
Nearly 50.
It's nearly 50 minutes long. So they, like I said, these three albums really, like Crossover was perfection. It's 35 minutes and it's flawless to me, not to you. Four of a Kind is a little longer.
It's nearly flawless to me.
Four of a Kind is a little longer, still very strong. This is a little longer still, and I don't love it as much, but it's still very good.
I feel like they were like 35, 40, and now we're at 50.
Yeah.
Yeah. 35. No, it was 39, 35,
okay.
50.
And again, I don't know if that 50 is counting these extra two songs. It probably is.
I would assume so. I mean, they're not real long songs.
They're not. Strategy is the first song I don't 100% love. It's good. It's not great. It's also could have been about a minute shorter.
It's also a bit more memorable, which the problem with this album is it is really samey. Really samey.
I was going to say that too. It is pretty samey. And I mean, that just could be part and parcel of the band here. And, you know, we're gonna run into something at the end of this episode that's relevant to why. Now, these two bonus tracks that I believe you heard, and they were not originally on this record, as I remember them, but like now that I listen to them a lot this week, I love these two songs. Labeled Uncurable is hilarious and great, and You Say I'm Scum is more of like a throwback DRI punk song. We'll just take them together.
I agree with both things you're saying to a point. Labeled Uncurable is fun, good track. You Say I'm Scum is where I see the weakness in this record, and I see now, knowing that it was left off, I see why it was left off. Kurt Brecht's vocals, he can't go fast enough. He can't go hard enough for this to work. And it really sticks out on this record, on this track.
Not unfair. The original side one ender is Gun Control, somehow still relevant today. We didn't talk about this in the news. I didn't blow my own horn then, but I will briefly now. I interviewed Paige Hamilton of Helmet. They have a new album out from 2023. Today, Blabbermouth shared it and honed in on his anti-MAGA, anti-Trump message. And he has a song about gun control on the new Helmet record. Still a thing today. Mass shootings and people with whole arsenals. I'm not trying to take away anyone's rights, but do you really need all these assault weapons to just protect your home? I don't think so. Gun control is still important. No notes.
Constitutionally speaking, protecting one's home is not covered by the Second Amendment, but that is neither here nor there. However, yes, we do need gun control. This is a great song. Love the message, of course. However, bloated at 5 minutes. Bring it a little punchier, a little angrier, and we got a better track. I mean, so far, we're at the point we are at now. I could have already cut this back to 40 minutes. And we're at the end of side one.
I understand. Fair enough. Side two begins with Flip the Record and Do Kill the Words. Very similar to Gun Control with a different topic. Aggressive thrash metal, not that punk anymore.
Yeah, I don't need this one.
All right, fair enough.
I need one or the other.
You need
Gun Control or Kill the Words, not both.
Okay. I think Kill the Words is like a censorship song, by the way, which is very interesting for this time of the world. There is not a sticker on albums yet, but it's coming. I love this next song. This is one of my favorite songs on this record or any DRI record. Definitely like a top 10 to 15 DRI song to me, Drown You Out. It is the punk attitude with the thrash metal music. I cannot get enough of it.
Good song. No notes on that one.
Fair enough. We are barreling through these. It's fantastic.
We need to do that. We need to do that more often.
We do need to do that more often. And Drown You Out is only 2.5 minutes. Pure perfection.
Exactly.
The Trade is next, and it's, again, another solid, not spectacular, but a fun song, and in the wheelhouse of these last two records. None of these things are outlandishly out of place. None of these tracks, you know, from the last couple.
I would agree. However, it's also so samey that it's hard to remember them. I listened to this 3 times today. And I don't remember this song.
Fair enough. I do. Another banger punk song, Standing in Line. Again, if you've listened to this full version with the extra tracks, this is the 11th song and almost the 40th minute of the album. And this is a minute and a half, right in your face.
I like it when they throw those old school throwback, like first, second kind of release kind of stuff. So that's fun.
Nice work. I'm going to do a little singing for you now. We're going to help Woodsy spread the word. Don't be a dirty bird. Give a hoot. Don't pollute is the next song. I don't know if they were out of ideas, if they were high when they wrote this, but give a hoot. I don't understand this song. And this is probably like, it's okay. It's okay. It's not awful, but it's not good.
All right. I'm just going to point it out. I love this song. It's fun. I give a hoot, but I still pollute. What's wrong with me? Come on, that's genius. Absolute genius. And it's just a, I don't know. It's a, I'm going to call it, it's an intentional lambasting of hypocrisy.
Yes.
It is probably not, but.
Yeah, it's definitely funny on purpose. How am I funny? But next gives a little more life to me to the end of this record. Worker Bee, a very punk anarchy type of track, wouldn't have been out of place at Gilman Street, where DRI played a lot at this time, living in Northern California. And Worker Bee, very strong.
I believe this track comes out after the Japanese prime minister discussing how lazy American union auto workers were, UAW workers. And That was like a big thing on SNL. They parodied it many times. I remember Phil Hartman portraying the Japanese prime minister in a really horrible, horrible accent that would not fly today. Yeah, they did what they did.
They did what they did. I'll give Phil Hartman a pass this time because he's dead and he
Well, I
can't
meant
defend
DRI,
himself.
but him too.
Yes, I understand. And then on a random last track on the album single that also had a music video, Abduction. I really don't know what this song is about even after seeing the video, but it is a good track to end on.
Yes, strong track. Do they know what it's about? Probably not. And this album, I w what's our scale? 1 to 10, A to B, A to F. What are we doing here?
We're doing tiers.
Okay.
Technically, my scale is numbers, and it's usually 10, 9, 8, 7,
All
6.
right, I would
But,
give this
like,
one a 7.875.
ugh, I hate the half marks.
No, I gave a 7/8 mark.
Yeah, this record's probably a 7 for me, sometimes an 8, song-wise.
Yeah.
But before we do the whole thing, I want to talk about a couple of other quick things. So, Josh Pepe is out of the band here, and John Menor is the bassist. And if I'm not mistaken, he stays with the band. But Felix is out for the next record, and they only have two more records and a single. They really don't have a lot more music. We've covered the majority of their over. But here's the interesting thing, like, if DRI never progressed past Crossover and they just stayed there, are they? I mean, they're respected. They deserve the respect they have. Do you think that they hit their ceiling? They've bottomed out by now? Do you think they still could have did, like, the next two records are not as good as these four records and the EP that we did. So, like, I'll stand on that. They really haven't made. They made one new song a few years back, and they haven't made, and they're not going to make another record probably, unless someone throws a bag of money at them. I doubt it. Do you think they topped out or they bottomed out, whatever you want to say, after Crossover and Four of a Kind? Like, do you think this is the nadir? It's on the way down now?
I would, it for me it's a complete bell curve. So my top is still Four of a Kind, Crossover, Dealing With It, then the punk one, the real punk one, the first album, and then this one. This is my least favorite. So they've got a really strong bell curve where they've got Crossover and Four of a Kind. Whichever one you think is better is the better one. They're really close in quality. I think Four of a Kind has a bit more, just a bit more personality, which is why I like it more. However, Thrash Zone loses all the personality that they had spent so many years building. And it just sounds, I mean, occasionally brilliant, but mostly generic.
Right on, right on. I'm gonna say to me, Crossover is a 9, almost a 10 in the genre. In the genre, it's a 10. As a record, it's a 9. I think Four of a Kind is definitely an 8 or a 9. This record's like a 7 with a moments that are approaching 8. Dealing With It is kind of an 8, so I think I will probably say Crossover, Four of a Kind, Dealing With It, Thrash Zone, Dirty Rotten, Violent Pacification. They're important, but they're recorded terribly. And I really much prefer the thrashier Crossover and Four of a Kind to the straight up punk stuff, which was great. Songs are great, message is great, sound is horrible. Like, I understand that every band's first offerings are terrible.
For the
So,
most part, I agree with that, but that punk stuff has way more personality than this.
I better personality, better lyrics, probably more important in terms of history of music. But like, I think Thrash Zone's just a better, yeah, I mean, it's not a better record, but it's better sounding. So sometimes that helps me. I
It
like them
is
in certain
it
records.
is definitely recorded and pressed way better.
And then, like, what is their pl like? So how do you view DRI? Like, so to me, I would say, like, at the end of the day, you can judge Suicidal, sorry. Gotta judge, you gotta talk about, like, apples to apples. Suicidal Tendencies as a hardcore band, upper echelon. Suicidal Tendencies as a metal band, approaching the upper echelon, honestly, especially now. You look at the history, they have much better releases at their peak than a lot of the bands we think of as better thrash bands than them. DRI has a couple of epic hardcore records and like two amazing thrash records and then a bunch of middling to me. What do you think the legacy of DRI is, and where, like, if you could only consider them a thrash band, where is DRI in the top 20 thrash bands ever? Did it make the top 10? Did it not make the top 20? Like, what do you think?
If I'm considering them as a thrash band, it's only this record. So, no, they didn't make the top 20. This record is, it's not bad. It's very mid. It's just not, I don't have this one. This was the first time I'd actually heard it. And I'm not buying it. I'm not going to buy this record. I don't need to hear it again. It's just so meh.
Yeah, I have the patch of this on my vest. This is the album I actually have the patch for because I couldn't find another one. But I also want to tell you, see, to me, Crossover is so good and so important, and Four of a Kind is right behind it to me and right ahead of it for you, that I think it almost catapults DRI into the top 20 thrash bands ever.
They're not, but at that point, they're not a thrash band. They're a crossover band.
Yeah, but Crossover is thrash. Crossover thrash.
Okay, if you're going to consider Crossover as thrash, then yes, they're probably in the top, they're in the top 20.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like it's important to make the distinction for me. What do these rankings mean? Ultimately, nothing. If Sepultura was a band that changed every single couple of records, they changed dramatically. How long were they really a thrash band? Three records where they were purely a thrash band. And you could maybe say Chaos AD is half a thrash record, right? And then they never were, you know, they were only thrash again later without Max and Igor. So, like, Sepultura is a death metal band. Sepultura is also sometimes a black metal band. Sepultura was a new metal band. Sepultura was all these other things. So it's hard to pinpoint. Maybe we'll do the Mount Rushmore thrash someday or the second Mount Rushmore thrash. But, yeah, if you want to wrap it up and take us home, I'm open to it because we are ahead of schedule and I'm really happy about it.
Yeah, I'm feeling good about this episode of Tight 45. Thank you very much. Well, hang on. I haven't wrapped this up yet. Thank you, Keefe, for agreeing to put forth DRI as our next series. I really enjoyed going through this. I really enjoyed going back through everything and being able to show off my kick-ass copy of Four of a Kind, which I love dearly. It's always illuminating for me when, because I would say that I love DRI, but really I'm a casual fan of DRI. I have two albums. They've got about eight, and I only know two. So it's cool kind of unwrapping the presents a little bit more, seeing if there's more there that I need to have, more there that I don't need to have, and I think I'm good. But thank you, everybody, for joining us this week. Are we ready to announce our next series?
We kind of have to, don't?
All righty. Next week, we are going to do a chaser, hopefully on Dolly Parton Rockstar, because I think that'd be a lot of fun. And then after that, we are going to begin our next series on Slayer. We are finally going to get into some serious thrash that doesn't always sound the same. Unless you're talking about their first four albums. And
Ouch.
Am I wrong?
South of Heaven does not sound like the rest of their records.
That's the fifth album, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, okay, fine. I mean, you know, like, you're counting EPs as albums.
I'm going to count it if it gets me to being right. So yes, we will do Slayer. And I am excited about that. I have not listened to Show No Mercy or Hell Awaits in a very long time, so it'll be cool to revisit those records. But in the meantime, thank you very much for checking us out. Thank you each week for joining us. It is humbling and weird that people continue to come back, and I appreciate that. And I wouldn't ask you for anything except for one thing. Could you please interact with us on YouTube? Could you please interact with us on Spotify? That those interactions, likes, comments, subscribes, are really what make the algorithm give us the big old, good old fashioned DC Defenders beer snake and gets us, you know, on somebody else's shoulder. So if you could do that, I'd be great. I would greatly appreciate it. If not, just keep listening. And in the meantime, this has been the This has been the Glacially Musical Podcast. And as we always say, it does not play in Peoria.
But DRI does still to this day.
I'm sure.